All right, let's get right into it today. We're tackling some pretty heavy stuff. You've been wanting to get into this whole wokeism thing, and particularly the arguments you see about systemic racism and this idea of
White supremacy.
white supremacy, right? You sent over this really interesting article from Economist Ujbrev. I mean,
Yeah, it's a good one.
it really just cuts right to the chase, so
It does.
ready to break it down.
Absolutely. It's fascinating. It really just goes straight to the heart of wokeism and kind of questions this big idea that when you see any difference in outcomes between, different racial groups, that automatically equals oppression. And they use the situation in the US as kind of this, big example, really puts it in perspective.
Okay, so can you kind of set the stage for us? How is this article actually defining white supremacy?
So they bring up Robin DiAngelo's book, White Fragility, and, her argument that white supremacy is basically like this system, right, that gives advantages to white people and basically puts them at the center of power in society.
Okay. And to kind of support that, the article mentions all these examples that DiAngelo gives, right? Where white people are just overrepresented in all these powerful positions in the US. I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
one that really stood out to me was like back in 2016, 2017, she points out that every single one of the top 10 richest Americans was white. I mean, it makes you think.
It does. It does. And it doesn't stop there. She also points out, at that time, the U.S. Congress, governors, top military advisors, the president and vice president, all white.
All white. Okay. But then the article throws in this curveball,
Yes.
right?
Yeah.
It starts to show us all these counterexamples
Right.
where it's actually Black Americans that are overrepresented.
Exactly. And this is where it really starts to challenge that idea that inequality equals oppression. So they highlight that at the time the article was written, the U.S. had a Black president and vice president, a Black Supreme Court justice, and Black mayors in several, major cities, all at rates higher than their proportion of the population. So it's kind of saying, well, hold on. If we're just looking at who's in charge, shouldn't this mean that Black people have the upper hand in these areas?
Okay, so that's a good point.
Yeah.
And there's even more.
Yeah.
The article brings like the NBA, the
Oh,
NFL,
yeah.
where, the vast majority of the players are black.
Right. It really makes you wonder if just looking at outcomes is enough to understand what's really going on. Like, there's a bigger picture here.
It's more complex than that.
Much more.
So the article's point is it's way too simplistic to just assume oppression
All right.
because, one group has more power or wealth than another. There's
Exactly.
got to be more to it.
Absolutely. And to illustrate that even further, they bring up a group that often gets left out of these conversations, Asian Americans.
This was really interesting to me. So the article highlights how, based on, all the data, Asian Americans are actually doing better than white Americans when it comes to things like wealth, health, education. It's like this huge piece of the puzzle that nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah, and it raises a really important question. If systemic racism is really the main force behind all of these racial disparities, why are Asian Americans succeeding to such a degree? And the article suggests that this data point is often, kind of ignored or downplayed because it doesn't fit the narrative.
And that's where this whole model minority myth comes in, The article argues that Asian American success is often used to create this harmful stereotypes, like they're somehow naturally more hardworking or intelligent, which just completely ignores the struggles and discrimination they face. It's like it's saying, well, look, this one group made it, so why can't all the others? But, completely ignores the fact that there are still systemic barriers.
And it can even, pit minority groups against each other. Like the article points out, data shows that Asian Americans are actually severely underrepresented in some areas too. Like there haven't been that many Asian American presidents or Supreme Court justices or even mayors of big cities. And they're underrepresented in Congress, in federal judgeships, even in the NFL and the NBA.
It's like they're using the same kind of selective data as DiAngelo just to make a different point.
And it highlights the problem of cherry-picking data to fit a narrative. You can't just, focus on the data that supports our argument and ignore the rest.
You need the whole picture.
We need the whole picture.
So speaking of narratives, the article dives into the work of Ibram X. Kendi, a leading voice in the anti-racism movement, and his book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. Mm. Be familiar?
Absolutely. Kendi argues that racial disparities, you know, things like the difference in life expectancy between Black and white Americans, are clear evidence of white privilege.
Okay.
It's a compelling argument, but the article brings up this interesting counterpoint.
Okay, this is where it gets a little tricky.
Yeah.
So the article points out that Kendi seems to overlook the fact that Asian Americans actually have a longer life expectancy than both Black and white Americans.
It's a really thought-provoking observation, right?
Yeah.
If we're saying that white privilege is the sole reason for that difference in life expectancy,
yeah,
how do we explain Asian Americans living longer than both groups? It suggests there might be more factors at play than just race and privilege.
So is the article saying that racism doesn't exist?
Not at all.
Yeah.
They acknowledge that racism is a real and serious problem, but argue that we can't automatically assume systemic oppression just because we see unequal outcomes.
Okay.
You know, it encourages a more nuanced discussion about race and inequality.
So it's not about denying racism, but understanding that it's more complex than simply saying one group is oppressing another.
Exactly.
Just based purely on who has more.
Precisely. And that's a really important point. You know, we need to move beyond these simplistic categories of oppressed and oppressor based solely on race.
Right.
There are so many other factors that contribute to these complex social issues.
It sounds like the article is calling for a more thoughtful approach.
Yeah.
One that, you know, acknowledges the complexities and goes beyond simple comparisons.
Yes. And reminds us to be cautious about jumping to conclusions and avoid oversimplifying these issues.
So if unequal outcomes don't always equal oppression, then what are we left with? How do we make sense of these disparities?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? And I think what I appreciate about the article is it doesn't pretend to have all the answers.
Yeah.
You know, what it does do is it urges us to be really careful about jumping to conclusions and oversimplifying these just incredibly complex issues.
Right.
You know, there's so much nuance to think about.
It's like it's pushing back against this like black and white thinking you see so often in these types of discussions.
Exactly. And what's so fascinating to me is how it manages to acknowledge the reality and the impact of racism without falling into that trap of oversimplification.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, let's look at the data.
Yep.
Let's consider all the different angles and have a much more nuanced and productive conversation.
Instead of just like pointing fingers and making assumptions.
Right. We need to be more critical of the information we're taking in, especially on, you know, these really emotionally charged topics like race and inequality.
Right.
And be willing to challenge our own biases.
Yeah.
You know, even when it's uncomfortable.
It's like the article is giving us this whole new framework for even talking about race.
Mm-hmm.
One that, you know, moves away from blame and accusations and towards like a deeper understanding of these, you know, really complex issues.
I think that's a great way to put it. And it brings us to a really crucial question for you to consider. If simply pointing to unequal outcomes doesn't automatically equal oppression, what other factors are contributing to these disparities and how can we address them effectively? That's what we need to explore further.
Wow. This deep dive has given me so much to think about, you know. It's clear that this conversation about wokeism and systemic racism is far from over. But this article definitely provides, you know, like a fresh perspective and some really important food for thought.
Absolutely. It encourages us to approach these conversations with open minds, be critical thinkers, and embrace the complexity of these issues.
Because ultimately, it's about, you know, understanding the nuances, having those tough conversations, and working towards solutions that create a more just and equitable world for everyone.
I couldn't agree more.